Not if I can help.
Does anybody in the audience want a handout of the presentation that we're about to watch?
We actually only brought enough
of
those ones to the board, but we have handouts of the.
I have an extra one.
Yeah, you can have mine.
Yeah.
I've exhausted it.
There, I'll anybody?
Thank you for coming.
All right. I was trying to take your roll off for you. Can somebody see if Chad's available?
He's working on it. Got it. Everybody's got their rituals.
Can you guys hear me?
Let me go.
Can I put this here in the back door?
Sure.
Hold on. We're getting there.
It should pick up here.
Okay. All right. We'll go ahead and get started then. We'll clear call the roll.
Okay. Are we sure? Trustee Drosty?
Here.
Trustee Donatio?
Here.
Trustee Lenarczyk?
Gotcha.
Trustee Lucas?
Here.
Trustee Harris.
Here.
And Trustee Yonke.
Here.
Your little switch isn't turned on. On your microphone. It's on top of the microphone.
Can I get approval of the agenda?
Can we table the Rose request for additional funding?
Yes. And we're going to, so, table resolution 939. Also, table update on 2016 sustainability grant for Erica's request. Any other updates or changes?
I move the approved agenda as amended.
I'll second. Mm-hmm. All those in favor? Shows you in. Great. Any announcements for the recycling day for Saturday? For hard to recycle items. And is that going to be at the where?
It'll be in the park from 9 a.m. to noon sharp.
Sharp.
So about 12:30 then?
I don't think that's a mountain term, sharp.
It does. It just means 30 minutes plus.
Right. Any other announcements?
Fall is here.
I know, with a vengeance.
Yeah.
All right.
Just in case y'all didn't know. Stop it. Well, we were all good. So mobile.
She's pulling out. She's going to dance.
I know.
She's dancing.
So Rob Stoll is here. They were the engineers selected by the town board to look at ways to increase the capacity of the Lower Main Street Bridge to try to reduce similar damage in a future flood event. And they've been looking to get the phase one. But this is just phase one engineering only up to a 60% design, and we have to submit this and they'll go through that whole process. But in order for us to get the rest of the design money and construction money, and I think they've done a really good job. We've met with the property owners immediately adjacent to the bridge, so the folks that we would need easements or property acquisition from. So that would be the Thorndike, Paul Hitchcock, and Bert Lupi and his family. We've met with them so far. They've all said that right now none of these options are off the table for them. So just continue exploring them. And we've also met with all of the property owners who attended this afternoon's meeting that are directly impacted by the bridge. So folks down Lower Main Street and up here on this part of Main Street up to the park. So they were all invited to come to that today. So I'll turn this over to Miranda and let her introduce
you guys. Thank you. So thank you for coming tonight. I am Miranda Lang, and I'm the project principal on this week. We are the Rockwell Consulting Group. Here with me, I have Dan Tuttle, who's the project manager. And then I also have Anthony Alvarado, who I like to call as our hydraulics guru. He works for Aaron Associates. He's our hydraulics engineer on the project. We also have a couple other names up there on the board that are with us tonight, but you'll hear a little bit more about them as well. So thank you again for coming. If you do have any questions, please just ask them. We are very open and honest about everything that we're doing. If you hear something that we happen to say, I don't know who is truly meaningful, or what, figure it out for you and get you an answer. All right? So, Dan.
All right. All right. Well, like Maria said, my name is Dan Hubble. I'm the project manager on this project. Just want to give you guys a little project background. As you guys know, in 2013, we had a problem with flood event that was upwards of 500-year storm event. After that happened, the town applied for and received the FEMA hazard mitigation grant. And that was to look at engineering and analysis of the creek and how we increase the capacity of that current crop. We were awarded this project in late May, and we began our analysis shortly after that. Again, our main objective was to increase the capacity to pass the 100-year storm and reduce the risk of similar damage in future events. Some of the major scope items that we have is topographic survey, hydrology, hydraulic analysis for the existing and proposed conditions, geotech. We had to develop different alternatives to look at this. Another thing we had to look at was the benefit cost analysis. We'll get into that a little bit later. And then ultimately the 60% design plan and specification. This just kind of shows you the progression that we've made to date. As I said, in May we were awarded the project. June and July was a lot of data collection and hydraulic analysis. August, last month, we completed the existing conditions for the hydraulics, and then we were able to start looking at different alternatives based on the existing conditions. We also got the geotech board done. We found bedrock to be 23 feet below the roadway surface, and we also began the three alternatives. We completed those alternatives, and now we're presenting it to everybody here. October, we're hoping to get some direction from the board and move forward. So before we get into the alternatives, there's a few important definitions that we should go over. Freeboard being one of them. Freeboard is essentially the distance from the top of your water surface elevation and the bottom of the bridge, and you're going to hear us talk about that quite a bit because it's pretty important. It essentially means that the more clearance we have between the bottom of the bridge and the water surface, the more room we have to pass floating debris in a storm event. And as you guys know, you're in a heavy debris area, there's going to be a lot of debris. The other thing you'll hear talk about is clear flow. That essentially just means that we're passing just water, assuming that there is no debris. And then we have debris flow, and that represents the flow of water with floating debris. It's difficult to model that floating debris, so essentially what we try to do is we try to set a standard of 2 feet or more freeboard. That's more or less would pass that debris. that's kind of our target for this design.
What's the target for 3 boards?
Say that again?
What's the target for 3 boards?
2 feet.
2 feet.
Yep. And so early on, we looked at not only the three options you see up here, but we looked at some different alternatives. First, let me get into the ones that you'll see up here. Option one is remove and replace the existing bridge. Option two, we looked at raising the existing bridge deck. And then option three, we would add an additional span to the existing bridge. Some of the other ones we didn't make it. We looked at actually relocating the bridge downstream, and essentially that crossing would drop and come over into the park. There are some issues, the V-cup issues, and the different park and type of property impact, so we discarded that option. We also looked at the fuse plug. The fuse plug would be a design where, in a 100-year event, we designed it to fail. So essentially when the flood comes through, it breaks open, and then you come back and fill it back in. Due to some of the difficulties and some of the unknowns with that option, we did not pursue that, and it didn't solve the problem that we set out as well. The other option would be to widen and raise the existing bridge, and there's a pretty high cost ramification for that, so we shelved that as well. And then, of course, if you do nothing with the bridge, again, that doesn't solve our problem. So, we don't consider that an option, but you'll see it kind of for the basis of our analysis. So, we're getting into some of the hydraulics. I'm going to let Anthony talk about some of the hydraulics.
Okay. So, the existing condition, again, three-board is a little picture here. You can see the lower, we call this the low course at the bottom of the bridge, which is the water surface. And our goal would be to have 2 foot plus of three-board. Obviously, with the sediment in the channel, we know there's only so much to do about that, but floating debris is what would eventually build up and cause clogging the bridge, is what we want to be able to deal with, at least in respect to the three-board. The current bridge does not pass 100 years low. You can see in this corner, 100-year three-board is zero, 50-year three-board is zero, 10-year is okay, 25-year is in between there, but it's less than 2 foot also. And I'll show you some of the existing conditions. So what we did then is we ran 2D modeling through this reach. It just allows us to get a bit better picture of what's going on in a flood event. It shows us what we can actually do. So you see the bridge is right here. Now notice this flow up here. This flow up here is independent of the bridge itself. Anything we do at the bridge here does not really impact that. It breaks out upstream. Also, you see this flow right here. Breaks down at the bridge, flows to the south. That is what we looked at and thought, can we do something about this? But notice there is a little bit of flow breaking out here that's not from here. That'll be more clear as you see the alternative results. 50-year, a little different, but notice how you don't have the flow breaking out so much down here. That's the main thing. But this is the existing conditions. Again, this looks different than a flood map per se, because it's a 2D model, so it's a little different. But it gives us our baseline to compare the alternatives to. And the 10-year, obviously, fully contained. But again, you'll notice here, you still have flow breaking out upstream independent of the bridge, even at the 10-year event. Okay, so option one, new bridge. Key thing here is understand that it passes 100-year with 2+ feet of freeboard. Now, obviously, the smaller events have more room than that. But that's a huge benefit there. Design, it adds the design life to be 75 years versus probably closer to 20 for what the existing bridge is. instructional in the current grant. The cons, you got to deal with driveway slopes, you got to deal with acquisition, these are minor things, but there's still issues that need to be dealt with. And it's the highest cost out of the total out of all three options. So it's about $1 million total for the cost. But it accomplishes a lot. That 2.23 board in 100 years is significant.
Is that 2.200 year clear flow?
Yes, but that means you have 2 foot to pass any floating debris on top of that 100 year flow.
Thank you.
So if you went with option one, does that change the flood plain or implications for adjacent homeowners?
So let's take a look. But again, 2D is a little different than 1D. We weren't looking at actual floodplain mapping. We're looking at the conditions. So it does improve the conditions, as you'll see. To see how this area here, even in the 100-year event now, it's removed. It's taken out. However, this is not, that's not the actual mapping. You'd have to do another set of analysis to actually change the floodplain. You know, we were looking at this more from the standpoint of the bridge and protecting this area. But again, clear flow, no debris, but we think it's got 2+ feet of room. We think it could be past the floating debris. But again, notice how this is a new bridge. You have room, but you still have this flow here that it doesn't impact, and then you still have this right here that's independent of the bridge. So we can improve this. We still have some of these issues here. 50-year, better as well. So option two then is to raise the bridge deck. You know, basically you're taking an existing bridge deck, raising it straight up, same width of the channel. The problem is you don't really add much freeboard. 100-year, 50-year, still not enough. You don't really improve the conditions, so there's a lot of cons here. I think you improve it to 25. 10-year obviously is better, but 100-year and 50-year, I would argue that's no different.
Is that because of the width of it, I just mean, raising the height, so that seems to take a lot of that freeboard, add a lot of freeboard to it, right?
But it helps a little bit, but, when you see existing conditions, this is 0 feet, you know, currently, that 100-year water surface elevation is probably, it's like 3 or 4 feet above the current bottom of the bridge. So we can't raise it enough if we just raise the deck.
To get it higher already.
What is it, like 2 feet? 1.5? Yeah.
I'm sorry, 1.5? Okay.
Yeah, 1.5.
Oh, okay.
Because you can't change the thickness of that bridge, you just raise it up. And then you're limited by any of the slopes coming off of it. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've got a whole other question, but it seems relevant now.
Yeah.
So is the assumption that there's going to be no increase in sedimentation under that bridge to back to your freeboard?
That issue is one we cannot totally deal with, right? Because it's very complex.
Right.
We can make certain assumptions. And when you look at what happened in your event, we look at what actually caused the problem at the bridge, and what we want to deal with is the sedimentation. We can only, you can't account for so much. It's gonna, what's gonna be in the channel is gonna be in the channel. It's gonna be a lot. That whole bed of this whole channel is gonna be moving.
Is there any way to design it
now,
increases the chances of pass through the sedimentation?
And that's why we want to deal with debris. Because if you can keep debris from clogging that bridge, then there's a shot, much more higher likelihood that it's going to pass through. Obviously when that, and you guys saw this, when, tail end of the event, when water is flowing down, you had sediment all across that. That we can't totally solve, but we want to make sure that this bridge is not explained so that this access remains intact. So you can keep the floating debris floating downstream, not clogged, and you can at least, keep this from getting heaven, make another pass.
So historically, the better to, not in this situation, any situation, is to raise the bridge up or make it wider.
Well, you can see what we did in this, the option one was kind of a combination.
Okay.
Because option one, with the new bridge, you can make that deck thinner as well as widen a little bit.
But I meant, just not necessarily here, but anywhere. I mean, you've heard that.
The constant stuff we saw was that the bridges that were higher survived the best.
Okay.
So, here we're limited by connecting to this road and connecting there as well. Okay. Right now, that's a good question. So raising the bridge, the existing bridge deck helps a little bit, not nearly enough. It is the cheapest option, closer to $700,000. But you can still see there's still some trickle flow here. And that's assuming that it doesn't get clogged, which, given that the freeboard is that low, I would assume it would get clogged. So even in a clear flow condition, you're still having flow coming out the side. 50-year, you're okay, but you were okay on the other one as well. So, additional span. Basically, we would add a span to the south. So here's the existing bridge. You add another opening. The problem with this, though, is that this spot right here basically becomes a pier. And the problem with the pier, then, is that debris can just collect on it at any flow. So your low cord, how high, how much space you have here almost doesn't even matter. So your freeboard is still not increased enough, and you have a pier to block it. So that's the main down there to the additional span. So here we see that. Again, this is clear flow, so you're passing it, but the pier is the concern that you have debris collecting on it. See, there's one more shift coming up.
Okay, so just to kind of summarize the options Anthony just went over, obviously, you do nothing, this doesn't help address the problem. The existing bridge right now does not pass the 100-year storm. And the other thing is to have really shallow foundations, spread footings right now. So the footings are about 5 feet below the channel surface. And the scour calculations that Anthony ran were right at or below that. So if we got a clear flow with no debris and it scours out, we're going to lose that bridge. Road option one, it does help to address the problem. We're able to pass that 100-year flow and provide the 2 feet of freeboard. Construction cost on that is a little over $1 million, and all of these costs include a 30% contingency right now. Option two, raise the existing deck or existing bridge, doesn't help address the problem. It does not pass the clear flow and does not provide enough freeboard. That cost is $650. Option three, with the additional span again, it doesn't help address the problem. Doesn't provide a freeboard, and it creates that center pier that Anthony talked about. And that cost is just about as much as the Kinney Bridge. One of the things I mentioned early on in the presentation is the BCA analysis, the benefit cost analysis. In order to get FEMA to buy off on this, we have to justify to them that these costs so the options outweigh, or the benefits outweigh the costs of the new bridge. And so we have a consultant on board. He's worked for FEMA for 30 years. Right now he put together the benefit cost analysis. We look at different things like the loss of life during the event, injuries, property damage, damage to public infrastructure, and future maintenance costs. And each one of these kind of has a dollar amount assigned to it. And he goes through, he looks at everything, he adjusts that. And that's kind of what we submit to FEMA to say, hey, you know, this option, we're gaining more benefits than the cost. So that's the benefit cost analysis. So after all this analysis that we've done the past couple months, our team is going to recommend that the town pursue option one, which is a new bridge. The other options do provide some benefits, but they don't address the problem that we set out to fix, which was to increase the capacity the crossing past the 100-year storm reduced the risk of a similar event. And so here's the next steps. We're hoping to get direction from the board the next Monday, I believe, October 3rd. After that, we will prepare 60% design plan, specifications, and the cost estimate. We'll also be finalizing some other analysis, the GPA, the hydraulics, and the geotechnical work. And then the final deliverable for us would be the 60% plan specs and estimate schema, which we have right now for December 23rd. So with that, we'll open it up to questions.
I don't know if it's a problem, or something like that, but what about a bridge that, like a steel bridge that was higher, that was an arch bridge, and didn't have a support, so you're extending it, but you're putting it above. I mean, and those steel bridges are ridiculously expensive. Is that why I don't consider getting like the looks, or
still have to connect it to a abutment?
Right. But would you have more room to do that if you went above instead of below?
Well, in that case, you still have the tires that exist in the road.
You still have the same
right.
You still have the same constraints, tying in the roadways.
But the thing that would be like an extended bridge without the post in the middle, and that's the problem of the third option, right?
So are you talking about a steel bridge would be wider as well? It'd
be wider and longer. But it'd be above the ground, so you'd be looking at it, but I mean.
So currently, the existing bridge is about 35 feet long.
Okay. Sure.
And what option one proposes is a 50 foot long bridge,
okay,
with it being about 2 feet higher.
Right.
So you get added length and depth to it to allow more water and debris to flow through so it doesn't collect.
Right.
Our biggest constraints that we have with this structure, because we could go on for miles, quite honestly, especially those really wide parts, you know, you could build a really big bridge to fit across that. The problem is that we have a very short length of road on the approach side into the bridge, and then we've got the curve coming out on the other side of the bridge. So that is actually a bigger constraint for us than anything else that exists out there right now.
But I'm going to demand to use the same footage as the new bridge, but you raised it up and made it like an arch. It was above ground sort of thing, not underground thing. Wouldn't that accomplish a lot more stuff to give you more clearance, free flow there? I mean, but I think
that's a good question. I think especially, I mean, you could get into the option of a prefab bridge.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Right.
But I mean, option one does accomplish taking me out of the if you look at, if you go back to the 100-year option one, you know, you've eliminated about all the problems you can eliminate. So raising it up and widening it more is going to give you minimal additional benefit, actually. You know, now
but you can
start
that.
It would start to
kind of push up something larger than that and want that.
Yes.
With a pre-build that.
Really can't go too much higher than 2 feet right now because of the constraint tying into this middle street. Because if we raise that anymore, I was looking at it, we would have to then tear out the stretch of Mill Street and raise that as well.
I see, okay.
A lot of it comes down to site distance and being able to see oncoming traffic, especially with the driveways right adjacent to it.
Well, I'm just curious, so it's sort of a pretty bad thing, like, yeah, would be a better option, or if you can design any way you want then, but I don't know how it works if the arch is going on other stuff, so.
Yeah. And this is just right now a very preliminary length and width and height of these bridges. We'll get into a full-on design once an option is selected and have better details for you. Any other questions?
You said that you look at other bridge options through the park. What does BCAP stand for?
We don't necessarily know what that stands for.
This is the understanding of voluntary cleanup, and when we set the EPA site, and when that was remediated, and the state and the Fed poured in close to $500,000 to put a new cap on the park, we had an agreement with the state about what could happen to that land, and we're operating under that now, which is a voluntary cleanup order. We're about to sign an environmental covenant with the state, which basically then enshrines the fact that you can't dig any place in the park. Period. And it's hard to build a bridge if you can't dig. So that's great.
Is it possible to lower the water level too, all the way past those houses on Lower Main?
Lower the water level.
You mean dredge?
Basically dredge, yeah. I mean for that, like for the water, what about that, past the homes, yeah. So you go from where, you know, some of the line houses around the middle there, all the way down.
Super far dredging, any kind of channel work in here, mm-hmm. it's got to tie in upstream and downstream, sure. Otherwise your channel is just, yeah.
I just like the house, yeah. What's the elevation change for?
The elevation change in here?
For the water, yeah.
I mean, it's multiple feet because it's so steep.
Right.
So that's the hard part in here. You know, your velocity is still high and so steep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you're, you know, each channel
is to the mellow out half the park then? To the
down here?
Yeah.
You know, it's still pretty steep.
Okay.
I mean, this is a very high drainage system. You know, like we're dealing with big content and you're dealing with, you know, crazy slopes, and this is worse. In terms of the flow. This is very extreme in terms of the world of hydraulics.
Okay. So it's not possible to make that deeper right there and then widening down below a little bit further past the last half.
It's possible, but you have to do a reach wide evaluation in order to make it stick. So, yeah, it's certainly possible, but a lot more analysis, and you have to widen your spectrum of how much you have to look at. So.
Yeah.
So it sounds like this is not the ideal location for a bridge. I've gathered and been here all 3 years at the choke point. So it's a hypothetical, and again, you guys are hired as consultants, but I'll toss the floor too. Is the Elijah Park pretty much the only other option we would have to do this thing if we're going to put a new bridge? And I'm thinking, you know, 100 years, 200 years down, the decisions we make now rather than just fixing something that's not quite right and actually putting something that would be better suited. And understanding that thinking of a super fun site is not going to be the answer.
I almost have, this is a smart ass response. This town is not exactly located in an ideal part of the problem.
Exactly.
I mean, you're sitting in a high drainage, narrow valley. And, you know, I can't, off the top of my head, visualize any other place for a bridge, given our current road structure.
Right.
We redid all, I don't know.
Yeah. I would have thought before this meeting, I'm thinking, well, that would be a good place to put a bridge, but digging up a Superfund site is not an option either. So.
Yeah. And the other thing, yeah.
And then the other thing is the traffic flow down Mill Street,
mm-hmm.
which is currently now a dirt road. Still gets a fair volume of traffic, but if you...
down Main Street.
It's really interesting.
It's like a dirt.
Yeah.
Any other questions or concerns?
No. I was just going to say thank you very much.
Yeah.
Very good friends. Thank you.
Very quick thing. We are going to give the presentation to Erica so that she'll have it in PDF. We are also going to leave these boards here, so feel free to look at them. There's some sticky notes, and if you see any comment or any areas that concern you or anything like that, just put a sticky note on it with your comment or concern, and we'll definitely address those as well. And if you have any questions, Tara and Jen and Erica, everybody knows how to get a hold of us. So.
Can I ask you a question, so it sounds like the only funding option is to run a place for us because we were here first.
Essentially, correct?
Well, I don't know the answer.
I lost another funding source.
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I would say that's a definite. I mean, DOLA was an energy impact grant, is what built this bridge in the first place. their issues with the energy impact grant and the funding right now. We've also received a ton of that funding. And so to say that down the road that there will be another funding group, possibly, I would imagine so. But are we going to come up with a different alternative or a different design? I think we're probably looking at some of the best designs that groups of people have been able to put their heads together and think of. If FEMA passes on this, does it mean that this is dead, which I think is your question.
Yeah.
And I think that what we'll have is a 60% design on a solution that is embedded by this community. Which always helps, I think, when we get, when we go for grant funding, to have a really good sense of what it is that we want to do. So, for example, when we did DOLA and other state grants, let me step back. DOLA and other state grants typically require some sort of a preliminary engineering study, and this is making something else of that to show that we've looked at alternatives. I don't know if you came to any of the meetings when we applied to the energy impact grant, that $1 million one that we received for the water system. Right before the flood, we applied for that on August 1st, 2013. We rewrote it after the flood. Many of the projects that we wanted to do as part of that were now going to be done through FEMA funding. But we had spent 3 years almost looking at or completing preliminary engineering studies on both the distribution system and the water treatment plant. So I think that this will be a big asset for the community. Should we not be able to proceed with any of these grants or any of these alternatives to this grant funding source, and seek other grant funding sources in the future? So it's a really long-winded answer. Sorry about that. Did that answer your question? Okay. So having a 60% design, I think, is going to help us. And the fact that we've met with all the property owners, we've shared with the community, I think will be really helpful.
So there are some handouts over there as well of these options in the code conflict. So feel free to take those and mull over some more if you have any questions. Let us know.
How long does that take to build?
So a brand new bridge, you could get it at this size, and you could probably get it done in 2 to 3 months.
And that's kind of, it would take that long primarily because we need to maintain that access route. If we could completely shut down that access route,
it's weeks.
Right.
So why couldn't for 2 weeks you just go back and sit down that way?
I'm not saying we could. We'd have to cross that bridge when we get to it. Yeah, because we can't get to 90 days. Not be good.
Well,
first of all, yeah. Then that culvert that runs underneath there that is in the greatest shape will be the one that's really upset. Yeah.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for being up here and working so hard to reach out.
Well, is that it? Is this really the way?
Yeah.
Yeah,
It's
the first item table. The next one is, Erica, you're up with approval to apply for a 0 week grant. So this is one that Erica helped us write last year, which we didn't get from the community composter. And she's come up with another idea for this year, which is great.
This is how I think this could actually work, and I think that something that the community is really, really excited about. So basically, the Boulder County has put out another call for a zero waste grant open right now to apply. for $10,000. The purpose of the grant is for a project that promotes waste reduction diversion from the landfill. As Tara pointed out, you'll recall last time we tried to do a composter because we were doing a big open. But that failed primarily because they weren't convinced our volunteer structure would maintain it. This is different. So the proposal that I would like to present to you tonight is to reopen Jamestown Recycling Day. Last year, Ward actually successfully put in for the grant with this program. So there's a precedent set now for this 2 years ago, but for the other proposals, then that was not an option. Just for the option, this actually has become an option for us. I have talked with the Green Girl, so Bridget Johnson is completely in line with this. The idea would be to do recycling pickups Saturdays once a month for exactly 1.5 hours from 10:30 a.m. until noon. She basically run it right after her work pickup. She would be asking per collection for $295. That would come out for 33 months.
Jen, I move to approve the application for the zero waste grant.
Second. All those in favor?
I want to vote twice on this. Yeah.
Thank you, Erica.
The count was 12 in favor.
All right.
Don't write that down right now.
Permission to use the Howell Biop property. Jen?
All right. I never know how far to go with these things. Let's start at the beginning. It'll be So this has been going on. This conversation started way back at the very end of February. The first thing that was done, and I'm going to bring a few things up that came up in the survey, just to answer those questions. Zach, in fact, Heather contacted Zach before anything was done at all. And he expressed that although he did not want to be actively involved in it, in making decisions or planning anything, he was pleased with the general direction of things and thought it was a great idea to move forward. After that, the adjoining neighbors were asked both for if they might have any interest in a potential maintenance agreement with the town. No one did, and also what they would like to see out of the property, what their concerns were, what they would like. So no one wanted the maintenance agreement, and pretty universally they would like the property to be kept pretty quiet. So that sort of put out ideas, say, for the jungle golf course or the horseshoes. That's not the environment that the neighbors are looking at. And also people really expressed concerns about not wanting it to be, besides the noise, not wanting it to be a place that draws customers from the Merck to go hang out somewhere else. So all of those things were taken into account. And then there are the restrictions on the property itself, which are significant, to understate it. You can't put much there, really. So, and the other ideas that were kind of around design were about making it something that both would serve as a place that can remind people of Joey and his impact on our lives without it being very hyper-memorialistic or like in your face with that kind of stuff. So, I mean, at one point we did talk about a life-size statue of Joey that actually moved and watered things and would be sensitive, would have a tracker so that when a car or a pedestrian came by, it would turn and spray them with the hose. That idea kind of drained away after a while as the reality of it sunk in, and that really long term, those aren't the kind of things you want in your face. The possibility for a Joey robot is still on the table for another project. So all you robotics people, keep that in mind. So after that, kind of given the constraints of the property and all of those other issues, and then thinking we had $20,000 and finding out we more like had $1,600 to work with that property, basically, I think almost everybody here was here the night that we first talked about that. To keep it kind of wild but also tidy looking, so not just a bunch of, you know, alfalfa growing all over, and to, as far as the memorializing aspect, to do it in ways that are more subtle. So lilacs were Joey's favorite flower, so in the little flat area by Arnie's fence, plant some lilacs, a stone bench, just like a basic natural flagstone type bench, in that area, so people can, a couple people can sit quietly, but there's not really room for a big party there. It's a slope, so it doesn't lend itself to that because people will fall over. And then to just sort of blanket the entire hill area with low-growing, hardy, drought-resistant, and good reseeding wildflowers and grasses. So it will look natural but still be pretty and not require much maintenance past getting it established. And then the flamingos will stay, of course, and maybe add a few more steel flamingos, which I had a picture and for some reason I didn't attach it, but because they're permanent, they're not going to fade like the plastic ones do. They're small. And so within the budget that we have now, that and maybe two trees is the most that we can pull out of it. So the idea is get started on that. If at some point in time there becomes more funding and more ideas that will work for everyone, then we can always add to it later. But to get kind of get going now, one, before everybody completely loses their enthusiasm, and two, because the longer that hillside sits with nothing but really invasive weeds growing on it, the more of them there are going to be, and the harder it will be to take over them without doing nature work. So that's pretty much it. And then there was, so that's been going on since March, and I know I've personally received at least 40 emails during that time from people with ideas, different people. And then a survey was done. Let me pull up the results. Over the last week, everybody take a break. Chad was part of this team, by the way. Oh, I should mention who was on the team. Heather, Chad, Anna, Payne, DJ and Javane, Louis Maurer, Hollis, Arnie, and Rainbow. So, Hollis, I know, right? Louis. So, one more time. Okay. Wow, this is doing really good. 72 people, including Zach, actually took the survey, so that was great. Did you see his comments? I know. We'll read those. Two people were strongly opposed, so that's 2.86%. Seven were neutral, so almost 10%. 11 were somewhat support, 15.5%, and almost 72% with 51 people strongly support. So it's fairly overwhelming level of support, and I think part of that is the idea itself and also just recognizing there is not a whole lot you can do with these properties, especially given that the neighbors definitely don't want to take part in the maintenance agreement, so now it's really on somebody to come up with something to do. So there are a couple things that came up a lot in this that altered the original plan. One of them was, and I can't commit to this yet, people need to be talked to about it. Some people want engraving on the back of the bench. Some people don't. Zach is not crazy about that. So we'll probably go back to the drawing table on that and say, can we have a consensus on that? Yeah, it sounded to me more like but it's something to talk about. But it doesn't need to be, that's not a decision that needs to be made in order. We know there'll be a bench. And it won't be extremely, extremely engraved. So, the sign will definitely stay. So, basically, that's about it, other than to say Zach is fully on board. So, make a decision and make it. Any questions?
I have a question. Not clear about what section needs to be decided. I mean, the land there, is it just a bench or?
No, just the permission to use it to do this stuff on it. So to plant the wildflower seeds, to plant the lilacs, to put a bench there, to make sure that the Hollitz Gulch sign stays. Because we're not technically allowed to just go around planting stuff wherever we want, even though people do sometimes. But we thought we'd go ahead and do it, you know. We're going to do it the opposite way of Jamestown tradition and ask for permission first instead of asking for forgiveness later.
No, on all the stuff, that what would happen there? Just you're sitting or?
Probably, because I've literally never heard and can't imagine myself what else you can do with these other than either plant a few things on purpose or let them go to seed. And so probably nothing would happen unless the neighbors decided they wanted to take it on, but it didn't sound at all like that was something either adjoining neighbor wanted to do.
So this is Chad, and I motion to provide permission to use the Hallett buyout property.
Are there any other questions? No?
I second second the motion.
Any further discussion? All those in favor? Show the DM. Thank you. Melissa, up next with a proposed maintenance agreement for the buyout property, and this is an initial vacancy.
Just to start the conversation, it's kind of an extension of what Jennifer was talking about with the maintenance of the buyout property. And again, this is just to start the discussion about some options for the maintenance. As you know, that the town purchased, acquired 6-7 properties with the buyout program, and now the town is responsible for the maintenance. So with this task to keep these properties maintained, staff looked at different alternatives to how we can do this. We talked to the Park Committee, but we also talked to the Parks Committee about availability of volunteers to do the work or hiring out contractors to do the work, cost of the town, of course, and then with our research, other communities have come up with or have adopted an Adopt a Lot program. And that's what I wanted to just make the trustees aware of. And what an Adopt a Lot program is when you allow the neighbors of the property or subject property that needs to be maintained to, in exchange for use of the property, to do that maintenance. So they would be sole users of the property, but they would also be the ones accountable for the maintenance. And with this accountability, they'd have to apply to the town for an agreement with the town that they would do this maintenance and they would abide by all deed restrictions and all other requirements the town would like to apply on it or remove from whatever requirements there might be. And then they would continue that maintenance agreement until such time when they don't no longer want to or they pass on the property to another seller and go through a new agreement. But it is seen as a somewhat successful program particularly for communities that have limitations on maintenance abilities. So we did a little bit of research tonight. Some items in your packet. One is an example resolution. Oh, I should back up a little bit. Before we brought this to the board, we did want to find out what the adjacent property owners thought about the project or the proposal. We got good feedback. A lot of the reasons why had to do with the fact that they didn't expect that their neighboring property was going to be a public space at that time. Also, looking at the different properties, a lot of them are pretty small. They're not conducive to large public gatherings. So the idea that they would be just open for anyone to use it at any time was a little bit disconcerting for some. And also, we found that volunteer committees and the park committee already have a lot of things on their plate, and this would maybe a good alternative. So again, we go back to what we found with other communities. For example, maintenance agreements and resolutions that we found. And basically, the maintenance or resolution has three things in it that I put in here, and it's just a draft, and it's a draft of process to make sure you guys know that you've not, the physicians have to adopt this because they consider it today. In the conversation over the next few weeks, few months, whatever it takes. But through the resolution, it basically frames out the eligible properties, which are about the 6, 7, two properties here listed are for the farmer's property, so I consider that one property, so I say 6, but there's 7 on here. We do put a clause in here saying that they're eligible properties unless used by the town for the purposes. So even though we have a few IDs for different uses, such as the Hallett property and some of the properties on Main that might be for community garden for other uses, unless those are successful and are maintained properly, they continue to be not included in this adopt a lot program, but could be eligible in the future if need be. We describe priority of use, which would be most likely in principle of visit adjacent property owners. And then it also leaves clauses that if adjacent property owners aren't interested, there are other routes to find different adopters. And we go back to the use of the property. The resolution addresses some of the uses that are allowed and not allowed, and these come out of the federal grant program, either HMGP or the CDBGDR, whichever one is used to acquire the property. And this might be an area that the board looks at and says, I agree or disagree, they can be more stringent. As long as we comply by these rules, we can be more stringent with the adopters on those ideas. And then it also has just a process, basically, adjacent property owners would be contacted and for their interest, and they would, again, then turn around and submit a interest letter to the town clerk, who would then inform those applicants of what the program is about, and then it would be put on the board of trustees' agenda for approval. There's also some damage deposit requirements and a license agreement that the property owners would sign. So that would help the town with if anything did come into compliance that they would have something to fall back on to talk to the property owners about. So again, the package included as addendum or appendices to the resolution, a license agreement. It also pretty much outlines what was in the resolution. A lot of different parameters about liability and uses and just understandings of what would happen if somebody wanted to adopt law. And then also included in that packet is the second appendix, which is the, oh, I apologize, that is second appendix. The first appendix is basically the outline of the deed restriction for each of the properties. And there's an example one in here, there's 6 or 7 properties, so I didn't put all of them in here just in case people were finishing them. But you can put them in the format of those. So, we did have this just in case you wanted to do, get some in a row, make sure we weren't stepping in a line. We had the Boulder County Collaborative look at it, and they pretty much gave their nod. They gave a little bit of text separation between whether it's a CBD, DBR, or DR versus an HMGP file. There's some light orange differences between them. So at this time, I just want to, again, make this aware that this could be an option for the maintenance properties that may not add extra brain to the parks committee or add a new committee. So we want you to just think about as this is an option, knowing that the property owners are in support, the adjacent property owners are in support, and that it is something that's been done in other places that has been seen as successful. So that is it for now. Unless you have any questions for me.
Hi, Carol. When you ask about this stuff, do you ever, do they tell you what issues might come up? Yeah, people agree to maintain it, and then they make their little garden, and the rest of it goes to top hat, so to speak. Do you ever find out, you know, any issues that might happen when that happens, you know, in terms of making agreements?
Well, I have not heard of any serious troubles with it. Most of these programs have been done in the past, like, 10 years with some pushing up those standing around those. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was such a burden to maintain these. So there, those communities do have a little bit larger structure for staff that can go out and actually make sure that they are being, the agreements are being complied to. We do have fewer properties, so that may not be as big of an issue, but the county is still the one that's responsible to make sure that the uses are complied with and that prohibited uses aren't being, you know, added to the property. We do have a few things that would apply to that. A lot of the properties, well, not actually, some of the properties are within the floodplain, so we do have a program for the floodplain permit. So anything that like a questionable could be reviewed, but basically we have to be some kind of a monitor and make sure that these properties are compliant. And that might be one of the things we look at for the allowed uses. We could restrict it down to, you know, this is what you want to do here and make it easier for everybody to monitor it.
No camping comes to mind, but that's just me thinking ahead.
I think no camping, no removing of trees without board approval, no cultivation of marijuana.
Paving.
What's that?
Paving of any sort, like driveways aren't technically allowed by some
of these. Well, I don't think we want to even do dirt driveways because we put all this effort in applying the erosion control, which is the seed and stuff. And so those would be things. My thought around this is that if the board members can take a look at it, community members are certainly allowed to take a look at it, or can certainly take a look at it. But let's get Melissa some feedback and discuss this maybe on Monday night and get that feedback incorporated into this. And then see if maybe we can use Jamestown Speaks to put some of the concepts out there and embed those to the community. Because I think what you talked about in there is that the adjacent property owners, while supportive of this, they're not supportive of it just being like a park area where people have and walk between their homes, largely because of these like park type concerns of it just being a public property. The camping is something that we've seen people already doing over across the street from Arnie's and my house, and a number of times. And I think there's some conflicting bonfires have been over. So I think there's some significant concerns, and one way to handle some of these concerns, and certainly the privacy concerns of the immediate adjacent property owners.
Yeah.
So, and we're looking to make that uniform against all property, because what's interesting with the buyouts is there are such different locations, one on Lower Main, one on Main Street, down Ward Street.
Well, I think the approach is to make it that all the properties are eligible for it unless there's something else that is going to be public or community
right.
maintained. As long as it's maintained and abided by the rules, then that's great. But if it comes down to kind of haphazard, when we and there are other options. You know, we could form another committee for buyout property maintenance. We could try to expand.
Walk away slowly.
And we know that maintenance, the contracting for maintenance may be difficult. So it is an option. So it's something that we want to put out there and start having a dialogue about. And,
Okay.
I have a question. Am I on?
Sometimes. You are on.
All right. I was talking to someone this weekend who was asking about and concerned about if we do this to all of the properties, minus the two that are already sort of in the works for something else, that there are a couple of those properties where people like to use those as access to hiking trails and access to the creek, and that some of that access was lost during the flood. And so the idea that I kind of was thinking of is a way to balance both of those needs, so maybe we look at not making them all that. Maybe we can split the difference and find out which properties. And see, I would imagine by now the neighbors of those properties have already seen what kind of traffic they're going to get from people using it that way. Anyways, it's just it's one of the concerns that were brought up that I thought could be taken into account.
When the property is between two houses, who has the agreement with the town?
Cage match.
Well, the way that this has been, and again, this is a starting point, but the way that typically it's done is side property owners, it makes the most sense if they're either somewhat their property line or right against the subject property line, not against the right of way, and that just looks, makes more sense for people that if it's the person next door to them, gets the first right, and then in this particular review, it gave a second to a folks across the right way or someone in the area. So basically, there's like a queue system of first right, not a letter of refusal, but priority for the use for the adjacent side properties and then across the way. And then
we're not looking back and we've been kind of following, but yeah. Homeowners on both sides of the properties.
Right.
Yeah, the answer to your question, Steve, is both of them.
They were share the property.
Yeah.
And then one decided they didn't want to do it.
And what happens when those two neighbors start feuding over whatever the neighbors feud about?
They sign an agreement, they maintain the property as long as they keep the maintenance of the property with the agreement with the town. I don't think the town is going to mess with whatever feud
so they put on. But I think that your question is, what happens if the two start feuding? The idea is that they would each get half the lot. We're not going to get into surveying and that kind of stuff. If people want to take on the cost of surveying the lot down the middle, in the resolution that she put together, that would be a cost that the property owners would bear. But basically, the idea is that she's outlined is that the property owners could split the lot in half and each maintain or use half of it. Now, if there's a dispute, or for any other reason, the town in here has the ability to terminate the lease agreement.
And actually, you should say the license and not the lease.
Sorry, that's a mistake.
I've been saying lease too.
The license agreement at any time, and there's some provisions under which to do that, but if it becomes like a big deal that we can't get results, then maybe the board just decides to terminate the agreement and take on the maintenance themselves or something. Who knows? But there are provisions in there to allow for this, as she specified, I think.
Right.
Denise, just one second. I think Jim had his hand up before.
Yeah,
and then you're next.
I'm guessing that Sandra's plot that's just been done is one of them.
So the idea, and I think Melissa mentioned this, is that this basically applies to all of the buyouts,
right,
which actually
right.
there's eight,
mm-hmm.
okay. including the double lot that Nancy's, which is 145 and 153, so I think nine. So the two that aren't on here, which as I was sitting here and listening to Melissa, I was just thinking that we should add, are 146 and 134 Anderson. Because they actually go, well, 146 goes all the way up to Mesa. 134 ends at Kate Brewster's property. And so it's possible that those adjacent property owners may want to use the top portion of those lots. It could be usable for things. But at any rate, the idea is that they're all in there, and they say that they're eligible for the Adopt-a-Lot program unless the town has a different use for them.
Well, the question I had behind the question was, I was generally under the impression that this was going to be a public open space in perpetuity, is that correct?
It needs to be maintained as open space in perpetuity, correct?
Would it be a public open space or just an open space?
Just an open space. And so, as Melissa mentioned, this is done in other communities and has been for years. This isn't
right.
like a brainchild of ours.
It's not a public open space, it's just open space.
Right.
What's the difference?
It means that it doesn't have to have public access. You don't have to provide that. That's part of the requirement. Basically, you just can't build certain things on it, and you can't do certain things on it. So that's in the deprestriction and the
You can't build infrastructure and stuff on there.
Yeah,
that's
like
flood infrastructure.
Forgive me, but I guess watching what's happened, it's been out of control over the last 16 months in our country. I tend to look at things way down the line and see how things are different earlier on. And I'm just wondering, am I going to be across the street from a public restroom with a pop-up and a gazebo and parking that's going to be there with people selling fresh fried? Who knows what?
I don't think that we can predict the future, but we can put in this. You'll see in both this agreement and the agreement and the resolution that Melissa put together that the town has the ability to specify the types of uses that are eligible or permitted, and then the types of uses that are not permissible.
And I do think that those concerns. Of the same concerns we Jason Harvey have.
Exactly.
So that's one reason why this is being considered. It's
a good point.
Right.
I appreciate
that you have speed on that.
Keep you up to speed on
that. On any development that would occur in that vein.
And this is the only thing that's being proposed. And so they could be good for you as well as it is for everybody in the community.
Oh, I don't have this property at all, believe me. I have enough of my own to take care of.
What I mean is that take a look at the resolution and the agreement
uh-huh.
and the types of uses that are permissible mm-hmm. and the types that are not permissible.
Yeah.
And I think at first in June, you'll be starting at parking lots.
Uh-huh.
Applicable. But this is starting with what the federal regulations require, so we can make it more stringent.
Just one second.
Yeah,
it's the panorama
form.
Right.
Yeah. For all of us, and all of us have had our cameraman, which is disgusting. When one here and another, Jim, and I appreciate that. My question more is, could you please define what maintenance is for a service? What is the maintenance that is to be done?
Basically, carefully weeds, overgrowth, any damage that happens to the property, if there is any.
Can you tell me the smallest community that you did your research on that this
which I just researched a bunch of communities in New Orleans, they're all going to be bigger than this. A bunch of communities in New Jersey and Baltimore, Maryland area that have done this. So I have not had an example in Colorado that's going to be Jamestown-like. But it is a program that could be adaptable, and it's a program that's been seen as successful to how they alleviate the maintenance of large areas that a community can't take care of.
Melissa, can you just for the record repeat the question? Since we're not having people come up and use the microphone.
Or we should have people come up and use the microphone.
Yeah, that'd be fine too. Cool. Yeah.
I think y'all know that I have an extreme interest in So I have an extreme interest in making sure that there's a lot of community input. You've already kind of said there would be, and things just that tonight, and that's all well and good, but I have the thought that this is a really fairly well-elaborated proposal or idea on what to do with those properties, and I think a lot of it revolves around taking care. It comes down to, it sounds like, taking care of the properties and ensuring the privacy of the homeowners. That's my general impression. So I'm wondering if it would be possible to have some other alternative or alternatives elaborated so that they've been fully explored, and when it does go to the community, like, they know the options. And maybe if there were a group that would be willing to participate in developing I think that could be done, and if it couldn't be done, then this is the only alternative, and you put it to the community. But I'm a little kind of cautious about just putting one thing for decision-making or input by the community with nothing to leverage against.
But I think one important thing to note is that this is one alternative. The community garden is one alternative. Community park space, like what was just approved for Howlett's property, is one alternative. So there's three alternatives right there that the community is already looking into. So we can certainly convene a group to look at other alternatives. The whole idea behind this is that this would be for, and I think there's endless ideas that comply with the permissible uses of these properties and the deed restrictions. But the idea behind this agreement isn't to say we're absolutely going to take the rest of them and lease them or give a maintenance license agreement to the adjacent property owners. It's just that if the town board chooses to do this, here's a program we can use. If there's no other use, if down the road the town or the community decides that there's another use that they want to use those properties for, there's an easy way outlined in there to terminate that license agreement and use it for something else. So it doesn't lock us into anything. All it does is provide a framework for if we want to go down that route for any one or some of these properties, and that's it. It's not saying that we're absolutely going to do it for all of these properties, because we've already decided as a community, I think that there are other things that people would like to do with some of them.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about it maybe a little differently, and focusing on the properties that will be subject to potential maintenance agreements. So there's some finite number, I don't know, you said 4 or 5, whatever the number is. And what I'm thinking of is, are there alternatives for those specific properties that would be subject to these adoptions? Are there other alternatives that can accomplish the primary goals, which I think are maintain the privacy of the adjacent neighbors and make sure the properties are taken care of? So given those two criteria, this is one option for how you do that. Sounds like it comes with a lot of overhead to me, but there may be other options, and my only point is those haven't been explored. And maybe if there were a group looking at other options, they would quickly
quickly conclude there are no other options, and that would be fine too. But
I think that
again, the point is that it hasn't really been looked at, except for this one idea.
Well,
that's not
what, right? I'm having trouble answering or addressing your concern because every option that community members have brought forward has been considered, I think, by the board. So far, that's been two. And I think one other key thing that this is trying to do is to put a way, or create a way so that we don't have people using these properties in a way that are not is not desirable to the community. So, for example, public camping, bonfires, that kind of stuff. But I think that moving forward on this does not preclude the community to be exactly what you're saying now and in perpetuity. These are properties, all eight of them, nine of them, are properties that the town will forever own. So even if right now we decide to take 150 Main Street and make it sort of a Joey Howlett Memorial Park, right? 50 years from now, if that's not meaningful to anybody and they choose, the community chooses to do something different with that property, they can choose to do that. And so I guess that's what I'm trying to say is I think there are two things, like moving forward with this and looking at other options can all happen forever.
Can I add to that just sort of the that was one direction with the Howlett's thing. The reverse is also true where we can do a maintenance license, and if someone comes up with a great idea for property X, we can cease the maintenance license and let that community group do what they were wanting to do with property X if they want to. I guess my big thing about this is a huge amount of thought has gone into trying to find any kind of alternative uses for this plan, these properties. So far we've come up with two. With the entire community, that is it, that are that are uses that actually can be done and that satisfy the wishes of almost, I've never heard any of the neighbors, and I've talked to all of them, say we wish it was louder here. So I know there are ideas out there like the horseshoe pit, but nobody wants a horseshoe pit in their neighborhood. So I guess I'm just sort of, I don't know where to go find, having already tried to find people who have ideas and want to make them happen, where those people are and what their ideas are going to be, especially when it's going to be open to do that forever. But I do think that, hold on one more second, that looking at all the properties and considering the possibility of access and maybe leaving a few of them open is good too. So.
And here's my comment, Steve, is that this doesn't preclude anything else. This is just one path and a clarification of how that path would unfold. And as Jen said, this did go to the blue house. And, you know, no creative alternative ideas other than what we've already discussed have emerged. So it's not like this precludes things. This is just a path forward for one option for some properties, possibly.
And I think also an alternative is to just leave them as is, restrict usage of them at all, and have the town maintain them. Which would be mowing weeds and trimming trees. I'm more concerned about not that there would be, you know, bonfires and camping, but what would happen if the adjacent neighbors start using it as their own and it becomes their own. It'd be a lot harder to take away from them if problems do arise. We have issues as it is with enforcing nuisance.
That's why I wondered about my question, what are the issues, what happens to the problem?
Yes.
And I think, you know, with the, if they are leased out to people, if there is a license agreement with an individual or individuals, that license agreement can be revoked and thereby helping to solve that problem and giving the town a tool to address some of the issues.
The advantage is that the license agreement sets out expectations for behavior, conduct, and use. Without a license agreement, if the lot sits there, people start using it, and, you know, then, well, gee, I didn't know I couldn't build a fire pit, or whatever. So this has the potential for some of these lots.
Agreed.
So this is not the start of the process, but it's in process, and there's more to go.
There's more to go.
Mm-hmm. So we're always for these meetings.
So while I haven't talked to the state, you probably all know that I'm concerned about the fence that's on this house, and I'd like to just ask what the status of that. Maybe you have more current information, but
I feel like I've already addressed this, and there's no new information. And so the fence was there before the flood and after the flood, before the demolition. And all I did was let the contractor who demoed the property replace the fence. So the fence wasn't falling down. And the idea being that when the board, the town, the community decides what they want to do with these properties, if we would like to take it down, we'll have some nice timbers that somebody can take down and reuse.
See, I don't think it's a like to take it down or leave it up. I think we're not in compliance with FEMA and everything I've heard. I think it puts the town in a liability situation. if there were a flood tomorrow, and that fence affected the water flow, and it affected the houses, you know, being taken out in the flood, there'd be really significant consequences to that.
So that fence was there prior to the, let me just finish. The fence was there prior to the flood. The floodplain administrator never requested it to be modified or taken down, and you can ask property owners of Ward Street who have had those discussions prior and since the flood. He was part of the grading. He was the one that wanted to ensure proper drainage on all of these properties. And so he walked these properties. Never once did Mark, our floodplain manager, raise a concern about the fence going back up. And he watched it go up, he worked with our project manager in actually ensuring that the properties were all complete. So if there's an issue, it's not been raised with me, and I don't know that it's in the floodplain.
Well, I'm raising an issue. What I was told by FEMA was two things. I tried to keep it really low profile.
It was way high, just so you know.
Okay, well, it should, because that fence is on by our property.
Right.
And there are strict guidelines and rules on what you can do on by that property. And what FEMA said is that either it's could be potentially not allowed, I don't know.
Depending
on the floodplain. But in any case, you need prior approval. And with FEMA, not...
You don't need approval with FEMA to do anything with these properties. We have to maintain compliance with global and federal regulations, and we have to have a floodplain development permit if we want to do something within the floodplain.
That's not what the FEMA people told me.
It's what I read your entire thread with FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how we learned it. So if you've learned something in a way that's different than what I've learned over the last 3 years of doing this, we can certainly have that conversation. But I'd love to have this conversation with you rather than through the federal government.
Well,
for a whole number of reasons.
Yeah, no, I understand that. For when, I don't know if I'm the can of worms, but I think there's issues that need to be looked at more closely, particularly with regard to that fence. And it's setting a precedent for anything else that may happen on these quiet
properties. It's not setting a precedent. So if it is in the floodplain, and if it is not compliant with the floodplain, we can absolutely take it down. Did I check? No, because it was just put back up where it was before, and Mark was involved, and he never raised this issue. What maybe you and I could do is sit down and talk with Mark and have him look at it, and we can take it down. I'm not opposed to that.
Okay.
What I am a little opposed to is raising red flags with the federal government when what you have said is that you don't want the federal government and the state and all these consultants in here, and that we should be able to figure these things out locally on a local level, and we very much can.
Well, okay, then I would like to do that with Mark and understand it better. And as far as reaching out to the federal government, I have nothing to apologize for that. If we're above the law, then the red flags come to nothing, and if the red flags have meaning, then we should have avoided them in the first place.
We're not above the law.
Within the law.
But you can have the conversation with Mark and see where the fence is and see if it was ever compliant. I mean, if it's not ever been compliant with the floodplain, we got a whole different issue. We should be looking at all the fences up and down the stream corridor.
Let's talk to Mark, because I think conditions change after the flood. So things that were true and valid and the way they were before the flood may not be the same today, and they're probably not. So I want to understand it in terms of today's conditions and the implications for going forward.
All I'm suggesting is let's not be choosing in terms of the types of things that are that we're compliant with and when we choose not to be compliant with those things. All I'm suggesting is that if our goal is to be compliant with our local and federal floodplain regulations, let's not pick and choose when we're going to be compliant and when we're not going to be compliant. If we're going to open this, let's open it to all of it.
Every property, every fence.
Okay.
All regulations.
Okay.
Can I just add one little note on addressing FEMA or getting answers to problems by emailing FEMA? I think it's probably really, really rare to get the same answer twice. So it's not as simple to solve as just send off an email. And there are dozens of people working on this constantly to figure out exactly what is and isn't allowed in every circumstance. So I guess, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say here, just that it doesn't really answer any question to ask one person, because they never, the next person you ask will have a different answer. It's way more involved than that.
Fortunately, and, one person didn't see this request.
But only one person responded. So, I only saw the last part. Okay.
The response is that it has to comply with the floodplain regulations. I see there is no benefit to me, or I think anybody else, in having put that fence up. It was just the contractor offered, you want the fence put back up? And I said, sure. They offered to. They put mostly a brand new fence up there. And if we want to take it down, we absolutely can. I have no skin in this game. And if it's not compliant, certainly hope Mark would come forward, as he was working on this project with our project manager, Steve Arden. And if it is, then we can decide as a community to take it down anyway. Again, absolutely no skin in the game for me, other than it seemed like a nice offer of the contractor, and I said, okay. So we can take it down if the board wants to. We can meet with Mark if we want to. It's no difference to me. I felt like I was just trying to do something right by the community there.
Okay.
So, okay.
And I wanted to say there were a couple
of alternatives also talked about tonight. Those are just a level. The alternatives included creating a maintenance committee to reach out to support maintenance of these properties, expanding the parks committee, and then contracting for maintenance services across this town. Just want to make sure that we are close to those ideas that we weren't just pushing one option on you.
So folks could more to get your comments back to Melissa this week. Maybe we can take a look at a draft of this with her comments addressed, or take a look at the comments at our next meeting. So Christy, if you can put that on the agenda. And then Melissa, if you can start thinking about a way to put this out to the community through Jamestown Speaks, I think that's something we can take a look at as well. Thank you, guys. All right, the next item for Jen, you wanted the Resolution 939 table for
Put it on next week while you're up.
The next item is approval of the CDBG-DR traffic calming engineering project with Boulder County and AECOM as part of the CDBG-DR repaving project. So, I've been walking up and down the street for the last three years to and from the town hall every day, and it seems like people are just being nuts through town, and a lot lately this summer. But as part of the Getting Around Town CPG, there were a number of traffic mechanisms discussed during that group. And we have an opportunity now with round two of the CDBG-DR funds to do some engineering around this and potentially include it in our repaving project. So with that, we have a proposal from AECOM that through Boulder County to do some engineering. And so the idea is that they would look at the engineering options. They have a copy of the long-term recovery plan and take a look at those, meet with the community, with the town board in a meeting, public meeting, where the community would be invited to also talk about any other options people would like to have looked at, go away, determine the feasibility based on codes and standards and general best practices, and then present back to the board some ideas, some alternatives, and then we could potentially get this included in the repaving project. The repaving project has a timeline on it, and so if we want to do this as part of that project, we'll need to get after it. Yeah, if we want to do this.
Yes, good one for my ignorance on this. What is AECOM?
So Jim asked, what is AECOM? I don't know if it stands for anything. They're an engineer that has been working with Boulder County to on the reconstruction of James Canyon and Lafayette Canyon. They've been in town and in the county for
years. Part of the complex of the recovery process.
I don't know what that means, but they've been an engineer that has been engaged with Boulder County on Lafayette Canyon and James Canyon for the last 3 years.
So do you need a motion?
We do.
I move that we approve a CDBG-DR traffic common engineering project with Boulder County and AECOM as part of the CDBG-DR repaving project.
Yeah. Wanting to slow down the traffic is huge in the community. I'll second.
Just as part of further discussion, I also included in your board packet a summary of round one and round two funding. And this task order is for $34,000 and change. So, any further discussion? All those in favor? Show us your hands.
Resolution 940, a resolution accepting a grant from the State of Colorado Division of Homeland Security Emergency Management, or DHSEM, for DEF funds, or Disaster Emergency Funds, for the CDBG-DR Rose M Extension, Waterline Extension Project, and the grant is DEF-JM-02. These funds were originally part of the two installments of funding that we received in round one for the Rose M Waterline Extension. We weren't able to complete the project, as many will remember, because winter set in and we could not put road base and do final grading on the road. And the idea was that they would deobligate the funds from the CDBG-DR funds because the timeline ran out in March. And they reissued these funds and a little bit more through the Disaster Emergency Fund to the tune of $30,000. So these monies are already basically spent. And so, yeah, this was always fun. So now you get approval of Resolution 940 through 2016 accepting the DEF grant from DHSEM for $30,000. That's great.
Jen, no, you want to take a break?
Sure.
What will you call it? Death Jam?
Resolution 940 Series 2016, accepting a grant from the State of Colorado Department of Homeland Security Emergency Management for the CDBG, the Rose M Extension, JM02.
I second that. This is Jen.
Any further discussion? All those in favor? So unanimous.
Everybody likes a good stuff.
I'm going to table this other thing. Jennifer Collins wanted to talk to table again, so so if I get a motion to approve tabling the approval of Ace Engineering Task
Force. Jen, I move to approve the tabling of approving Ace.
Task
orders.
Second.
All those in favor? So unanimous.
Woohoo!
Okay.
Good pace here.
I know. Well, listen, you're up. Update on the amendment of the nuisance appointment.
Okay, so this is the topic that came up for first discussion for November 12th. The town has received a number of complaints about speed limits in town. So one of the ideas was to slow it out yet whether or not it should be expanded to include vehicles. That's what it's referring to if it deals with trash, junk, and other ideas. A little bit of background that we talked about last time was that we did a little research with some communities in the area, and then also talked about how it can be enforced with the sheriff's office. And to do that, if this route is what we're going and it's not decided upon yet, we would have to amend or create an ordinance that addresses this. So, at the last board meeting, the board asked to get public input on the subject. So what we did was we emailed everyone in the community on our email list to have the copy of a starter ordinance, not the final one, just something to start with, a straw-man ordinance that is typical in Colorado communities because of Colorado has a model transportation code that most communities have adopted. And so that language is out of there, and it can be amended to fit Jamestown however you want. But we sent out a community on September 22nd for comment. We asked for comments by the end of this week. I think we'll probably extend it a few days, and we've gotten 10 comments back. I can say that it is a spread. There's basically five do it, that's it. A couple that are completely against it, and then three or four that want to see some considerations made to the language that's in the text and how it's applied before we can make a decision. So the idea is to go ahead and send a reminder out at the end of the week to get comments by the 5th, and then we can get those comments consolidated for the board for the October 17th board meeting.
Any comments on that? Any questions?
No. I foresee this being one of the ones that we eventually move on, and then we eventually hear about how they can't believe we moved on without one in public comment. But this is going to be a big one. So. Nice.
And again, it doesn't have to be done in one meeting.
Right.
It doesn't have to be done in such a great meeting.
Wait, one more. Jim, did you have a comment or question?
Yes.
Can you come up
and speak to my phone, please? I read everything that you sent out.
He did not make a comment.
Everything that you read out, that you sent out, I read it all. And the thing that occurred to me originally was, is this an entire ordinance that we're trying to introduce just to deal with one problem?
No, it's one that it's an existing ordinance in town that we're trying to update to address a problem that's been raised by many community members as a real issue. And after speaking with the Boulder Sheriff's Department on how to do this and other folks that Melissa's spoken with, it seemed like updating our existing nuisance ordinance to cover this what made the most sense.
Mm-hmm. But I'm just concerned that
it's one update to an existing ordinance just to include it in the vehicle.
All right. I'm just a rough proponent of that government's best, which government's least.
Jenna's wanting to know this is going to be in the house. And if you see me, if there is one problem, yeah, there's a lot of abandoned vehicles and it's
right.
Individual. The issue is, though, unless we look at it, unless we do something, the bottom line is public streets. What are you going to do? Period. I mean,
private property. What are you going to do?
Property.
Actually, while the complaints have been about, you know, one primary,
mm-hmm. Yes.
There are quite a few of them in town.
Right. So, abandoned, you know, so.
Producing stems from one initiative source.
Absorbed and amount of
a lot of complaints, though. And the reality is, what are you going to do?
But we have to treat it fairly. This goes to what I was saying. Like if we're going to address this issue, we mm-hmm. need to address it fairly and uniformly. Mm-hmm.
And this is the forum to do so.
Right.
So. Oh, no, I have no doubt about that, and I don't question that. It's
you don't want to rule and regulate everything, and yada yada. Exactly. That's why it's a discussion. That's why you want to be that.
Exactly.
That's
why
you
want to hear from
people. It all works until, you know, a couple people push the envelope, and then the community loses their tolerance about this, and I think that's what we've seen.
If this problem would disappear, would there be a need to amend the ordinance?
Yes. I think that's up to the community. So that's why we're seeking feedback on that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's what just occurred. That's, in a nutshell, mm-hmm. what came to me is why something large when you can deal with something small.
Because we can't deal with a small.
And assuming that can happen, ask and talk to you may not.
A lot.
And also, I mean, you can go out, Jim, no?
Yeah,
go for it. But I also think that this goes towards, like, what do we want for our community long term? And is this something that we want, or is this something that we don't want long term? And now is a good opportunity to see whether or not we want to address this issue now, or if it's a later or never.
So the issue for me is how much do junk and abandoned vehicles add a quaint character to town, and how much are they really kind of yucky? And I think that's, for me, where it comes down to. And I guess. I don't expect Jamestown to look like Boulder, but I'm not sure I necessarily have to live in a place which has junk vehicles throughout town on public right-of-way.
Or visible, like in people's yards. Like that's another thing. I've noticed them starting to multiply, actually. And multiply down Main Street.
So anyway, well, thank you for the clarification.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. Anybody else on?
A little bit, just that I'm not sure how to put this. Generally speaking, I don't think anybody should have, the government should have anything to do with what people do on private property. Maybe you could say build a fence around it, but really to separate public property and private property. And just when we look at it long term, making sure we're not going to create an environment where people are just constantly tattling on somebody for something that maybe is going to go away in a week or 2 weeks. I mean, we have a lot of people here. I can't tell you how many times there have been cars in the parking lot by the park. Do I like looking at them every day? No, but sometimes people's car breaks and it takes them 2 weeks to fix it. I'd rather live in a place where people have the ability to do that than, say, punishing people for not having enough money to fix their car. So to do this in a way that eliminates only the most extreme lack of concern for the community rather than letting it turn into a thing where it's hard for people to live. Freely, like Americans. That's all.
Well, and I think, to your point, that what we reviewed the last meeting was very in-depth as far as, like, what is considered a junk vehicle, what is considered an abandoned vehicle. And I think that's where, for me anyway, that's where this really separates out between somebody who's just got a car, a 67 Camaro that they've been working on for 10 years of their lives, sitting in their yard, and somebody who's collecting stuff that's never going to be fixed or done, anything done.
Exactly.
So, So I would say if that's somebody's concern, that no, actually definitions are very well laid out in everything as far as what it is and describing what it is.
Is this an ordinance that, or the changes, will it have teeth? Will the town have the force to actually take action and get an offending situation resolved? I'm just not clear about that. Because we wind up in that position a lot. We have all sorts of things that, you know, we'd like to do in town, and there's really no way, to enforce things. So is there an enforcement mechanism that is reliable, I guess, is the question I'm going to ask.
The answer is yes. If we have an ordinance on the books, then the sheriff will enforce the ordinance under the district governor's name.
It's not
one of those ordinances like we have several on the books that say if you don't comply, there's a $1,000 fine, but we don't have a court, so we can't impose a fine. This whole point of this is if we did it,
well, the county sheriff will enforce it.
We've talked to them and they said they were willing, but they can't enforce anything that we don't know.
Okay. Discussion of amending the ordinance 2, prohibiting discharge of firearms or disturbance of the peace within town limits.
This is also a continuation of the discussion that we had on the September 12th meeting. The proposal is to amend the firearm ordinance to include a clause that allows the town to, community members to fire rubber bullets, sandbags, or other non-lethal objects to deter bears. At that time, we also included something about removing noise constraints in regard to deterring bears at that meeting. There was some concern on adding the second piece about the noise constraints. So what we've done is basically just taking out that language and kept in the exception of the rubber bullets, sandbags, and other non-lethal protections to deter bears. So basically what you want in your packet is the exact same ordinance without language in regard to noise constraints. And then just basically just updating what the ordinance number would be and be signed for that. So again, it's just up for discussion right now, and if there's any feedback on or clarification on the language for this ordinance.
This is Chad, and I will tell everybody that I'll be voting against this because I'm not for giving anybody any sanction to fire any kind of firearm in town for any reason. Like, I don't, you know, I'm sure there's probably 100 different ways they came up with the deterring bears over the 200 plus years they've lived out here in the West with bears. And I can't sanction allowing any kind of reason for somebody to have a reason to fire a firearm off in town. So.
I just think that my comment is, I'd like to see the resolution come up for a vote. As currently written.
The firearm ordinance?
Yeah.
Is that a motion or a suggestion of a motion?
Well, I don't think we can make a motion at this time.
Okay.
So I'm just saying I'd like it to be on any future agenda, but these fairly contemporary future agenda and the height of the potential bear hazing season.
Anything else? Well, that's an interesting concept. We put a time around that. Like, for example, during these months, we will allow the discharge of firearms or will forever for the hazing of bears. So
we've given out rubber bullets and beanbags from the town hall.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So silly to be sure you put in there. But I think that this is for the, I mean, rubber bullets and sandbags, but I don't know why there's another use of discharging those in town.
Right. And this has to do with having Colorado giving me the right like support for such actions. Is that not going to show rules?
I agree. We should get this on the agenda for vote.
Okay. Comprehensive plan update?
Do you want a chair?
That's great. I just want to let you know how the plan is to do this at past meetings that we've got such big agendas that we've also been able to break that I decided that we've already approved the update by now. As you may recall, in August, we decided to go ahead with the updated comprehensive plan, and part of those ideas were to do some draft chapters of incorporating information from the recent studies and plans into the 1981 version of the comprehensive plan and identifying areas that we need to update. And then from there, I would meet with different planning groups that have been involved over the past couple of years that have been in focus areas, such as the long-term recovery plan community planning groups. So, Since then, what we've done is we've made a page on the town website. It has a little bit of background on the comprehensive plan. It has three sets of chapters, which is the original plan, and then also the red line version of the plan, and then a plain line version. Some people like red line, some people don't, so there's both there. And since then, I've met with a couple of CPG groups, and we've done some modifications to the engaged plans, and I'm about to send those out and put them on the site. October, I'll be meeting with the Luhawk and also another CPG group that's focusing on utilities and services, and we'll get those chapters and move on from there into November, meeting with one of the main chapters, or the main planning group. And that will be open for discussion, and then we can start with, if we need more depth explanation of each chapter, community meetings from there, but at least the strong man, at least the base plan is out there for people to review and comment on. And we expect to have that by the end of the year, early next year, and then spend a few months trying to wrap it up.
Thank you.
You're up next.
Drainage and stormwater management master plan update. I just want to make sure we talked about this a little bit at the last meeting too. I did a little bit. Basically, we were awarded a grant for the preparation of the drainage and stormwater management master plan. We've been waiting for that for a few months now, and we signed the award in July, and now we are in the process of finding consultants to help us out with that. After some discussions on what's been done traditionally for hiring people through the RFP process here, typically it's a staff or a technical review with a couple members of support. So we went that route because we were a little time constrained with our agreement with DOLA, Department of Local Affairs, for me to get a contract in place, and that is by the end of October. So we have a group that is convened. It's basically the staff members, and then Vic Harris and Jen Lucas. The reason why I talked to those two is because they're part of the Road and Bridge Committee, also Park Committee, current Road and Bridge Committee, and that has a lot to do with the drainage issues that are going on. So we are looking at some proposals that came in. We got 5 proposals last week. We're making sure they're qualified, and we want to meet it down to a couple, and then move on from there. And then hopefully by October 17th, we can give a recommendation to the board. So, consideration. Well, this is something, if you haven't heard about yet, you will. This is the NFL Energy Street Light Exchange. We had talked to Excel. They came to the town and said they want to do this program with the town. Took us a while to talk about whether we wanted to do it or not. Originally, we had until the end of 2016 to make a decision. We made it a few months ago. And suddenly they're up. We thought this would happen in 2017. We also had talked to the installer of Excel and asked for leeway to let us know what's going to happen so that we could talk to folks about it and give them a FYI. But the various things of that conversation, they were being mounted. So we have heard some issues on the differences with expectations that are a little bit brighter than that people thought or not. Not what was expected. So we have to talk to Excel, and we're going to find out different ways that we might be able to address, particularly the intensity of light. So back in, might have been March when we were talking about this, we did ask them a bunch of questions about what we should do with the lights, about lowering the lights and shadowing the lights and all that. But we know that we can't lower it, but we're hoping that we might find some solutions with these discussions with staff. So there was a little while, we've heard people's complaints, and we are definitely noting definitely for them. We had hoped to work to get as well, so we'll find out what we do.
So as I recall, and it must have been after April when we did this, but and I'm sure about it because I asked and looked at it, Excel explicitly said that these new lights would be night sky compliant, and that's why we're having an issue, is because what we approved was a change to these lights that were night sky compliant. And then, and if I understood correctly what I talked to you about earlier today, they would be if they weren't so high, and they could be if they had the shrouds on them.
I suppose it depends on what your definition of night sky compliant is, and I think myself are arguing that it's the full cutoff and regardless of the height. So the problem here is that there's other impacts that are happening on not just light back compliance that we need to address and try to balance with the benefits of energy savings and
right. Well, the brightness that is bothering people, if it was actually night sky compliant as traditionally understood, that wouldn't be a problem. I know you're talking to Excel. They're not interested in these reasonable things. So maybe when you're talking to them, could you find out, and I realize that their first answer is going to be no, and possibly their second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth answers, but what if we wanted to make our own shrouds? Can we do that? Will they install them if we come up with our own? Because to me, it just seems like that's the way to actually get good lights that are energy efficient and also get the night sky that everybody's looking for. And it doesn't seem... I've had conversations before any of this started about how fun it would be if we had like our local artists make the shrouds because they could be really cool looking. But the question is, are we allowed to put them up there? Well, right now I'm asking permission. After they say no seven times, I'll just say, I'll just turn a blind eye. Yeah, so if you could ask that question, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's actually a very different approach historically from how people in Jamestown have dealt with bright street lights, which is to just charge a firearm in their direction.
No, so, of course, that was their plan.
This has been discussed in the past, and there's always been a split between people who want Jamestown to be dark and people who feel uncomfortable with that much darkness and some potential safety issues. So,
liability.
So that's why we still have street lights.
Mm-hmm. And because not enough people have shot them out yet. Not that I'm encouraging that, I'm just stating a fact.
I wanted to give an update on Gillespie Gulch, and let folks know where we are on that. So,
it was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
You may recall that we've presented a number of different design options. The design options submitted maybe like a year ago or a little bit more. Let me back up. For our FEMA PA projects, there's a cost to return it to pre-flood function. Then there's an additional cost that we can apply for current codes and standards that we can demonstrate have been used. And then we can do what's called a hazard mitigation project on top of that. The cost of this project cannot be more than the cost of returning it to function. So when we say that this can't be more than 100%, what we mean by this is that the incremental cost to do the hazard mitigation project cannot be more than 100% of the cost to return its function. There are a lot of different nuances around that, because when are we going to, if we're doing codes and standards, when are we going to design and cost out the return to function? So we have to estimate that, and without designing it, that's not what we're designing. At any rate, the last solution that we presented to FEMA was 103% of return to function. So they have always drilled into us that hard and fast that there are no costs above 100%. So we went back, and we've been working with the state, and we went back and redesigned this. This time we took an approach which, in hindsight, it would have been great if somebody had shared a lesson learned around this, but we can now for future communities, is that pick your budget before you start and do a design too. And not that it would have solved this problem because it was done in iteration before, but so we did a design too, and we came up with a cost savings of about $50,000. And we're at 80%, giving us 20% contingency. And then they came back and said, well, what's the effective life of it? Well, the design is, design A, the original design, was a 7x7 concrete box culvert going to a 7x10 concrete box culvert with internal energy dissipating to baffles. Option B was a 7x7 concrete box culvert with a plunge pool at the outlet of it with boulders in it to dissipate the energy of the water before it hits the creek. So when we talked, when we were asked about effective life, we had to go back and do some research. It turns out that concrete has a longer effective life than rock. You can argue, apparently, that with proper maintenance, the effective life can be about the same. But at any rate, when we submitted this to FEMA, everything was looking good. We thought things were going as we thought. In fact, the state even said through, like, Mom, we've got a contractor on board. We had awarded, we'd given a notice of intent to award to Edge Contracting. And they were asking, are we going to do this? Are we not? You may remember we were going to start this project on July 5th. And they came back and said, well, they said, things are looking good. What we'll do if everything works out, we'll send the state a letter that says Jamestown can proceed with construction while at the same time FEMA is doing the scope, writing up the scope change. Then some new people got involved on FEMA's side, and there were differing, then we were hearing that there were differing opinions about this. And then the results came back, surprisingly, that they did not approve option B, and they said to go with option A, and that they would work with the town on eligible expenses for option A. And by the way, the engineering costs to get from option A to option B, since we're not going to construct option B, are no longer eligible for reimbursement. Yeah, so you can imagine none of this made us very happy, it's a light way of putting it. And so we're in the process right now of determining what all the costs were that we spent on option B to try and figure out where that funding is going to come from. And we have a couple, I think the discussion with the state and FEMA isn't quite over yet. And we've got some other potential options for that, and the state is also looking for some options. So I don't feel desperate around covering those costs just yet. At any rate, what we're also not clear on is what they're going to cover, because when they say they're going to work with the town on the eligible costs, it says in black and white that they don't pay over 100%. So why they're approving a project that's already 100% with no contingency?
It's not approving the one that's 80%.
With contingency and with the town's approval of a lower effective life or lesser effective life. At any rate, it's been kind of baffling. And but I wanted to give everybody a heads up on this is where we are with the project. So the next step is for the state to recap their conversation with FEMA around this and in terms of what they heard FEMA say to them around eligible costs and going above the 100%. And then we will send it back to FEMA for and ask them to confirm that everybody's in agreement on what this means. But our hope is what they mean is that just like all projects, eligible costs are reimbursable, period. And if they're giving us the approval to go above 100%, then our anticipation is that regardless of how far above 100% we go, if these are eligible costs to get the scope of work that they've approved done, then they should be reimbursable. Question.
There will be a test.
Everybody who's had it not spinning, raise your hand.
I was very disappointed in this news. So we'll keep you updated on that, but we will go back out to bid. We have let Edge Contracting know and thank them for holding their bid for many months while this is going on. But we will be going out to bid. We don't have a timeline around this yet. Okay. So next item. I've already spoken to each of you about this. Please, also point. Okay. Alright. So what I wanted to do is give you guys sort of a project summary. And I can share, there's 10 copies that I printed out, but there's extra if you guys want it. Anybody else wants them? The color didn't come out very well. It's disappointing because I had pretty color on the second and third page.
Yeah, I know.
Well, let's just table this then until we can get some better color in this chart.
Is that covered by FEMA?
So in terms of the project summary, we have 51 grants and for a total of $22.6 million obligated. Of that, we've spent about $16 million and about $5 million left. If you flip to the next page, these are the 51 grants. So if the coloring has come out right, the in process, that line that says that, should have been green, matching the green that says in process over on the right hand side. The next section would have been yellow as it came out. The complete section should have been red, so that didn't really come out at all. And then the gray section is just the gray section of clothes. So we have 20 grants currently open and in process. And I grouped them by the FEMA PWs that are in process, the HMGP projects that are in process, the 2016 Boulder County Sustainability Grant, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, the $1 million Natural Disaster Relief Grant, the CDBG-DR grant, the DOLA grant, and the Greater Outdoor Colorado. And what I wanted to share with you in doing so, and outlining it this way, was to let you guys know that we have a really good handle on each of these grants, where we are, what's happening on them, where it says percent complete, next to the project manager column, the third from the right. I did my best to sort of explain, put in there, so there's a percentage of complete in terms of the work done or to be completed. So, for example, on the public assistance, the PW79, James O2, Cat C, Culvert Replacement Repair, Cat C, L. So all that means is that the grant funding source is a FEMA public assistance grant. FEMA's identifying number for this project worksheet is 79. We have our own internal numbering system, so James 1 through 18, because we assigned them numbers before FEMA did, because FEMA has to put it all through their process before we get a number. This is a category C, so you might remember there's categories A through G, and category C is for roads and bridges. And the amount obligated for that CW was $96,000 and change. We spent a little, I don't know the exact amount, but we haven't gotten any payments on this. We haven't technically spent anything. But what we've done on this is we've evaluated, this is for the Hollis Gulch culvert. We evaluated the structural integrity of this culvert, and it was determined that it is structurally sound. And so, as a result, there's no more work to be done. However, we're looking to do a scope change request. Both the counties have been looking at this, and they were the ones who originally constructed. And there was a concrete pan that ran out to the creek from the outlet of the culvert. And so we're looking to see whether or not we can get that included in the scope of the work, because it's not currently. So this project is assigned to Jennifer, and she's working with Boulder County through our IGA on this. It's about 10% complete, because all we've done is contract with AECOM through Boulder County and completed the structural analysis of it. But we may potentially complete this along with PW 1123, which is James Canyon. So as an example, that is what is outlined in all of this, is all the projects, what we have obligated, what we've spent, how much we have remaining, who the project manager is assigned to this, what percentage complete we are, the status of it, and the next steps at a very high level. So moving on a couple more pages. The point being is that all of these projects are assigned, and we feel like we have a good handle on these. Whoever is assigned as the project manager is working closely with, for example, Jen for roads and bridges, or the water committee and the water plant operators for anything water related. Anything floodplain related, Mark Williams, that kind of thing. And what this is going to allow me to do is to step away from the day-to-day activities. And I'll still be managing the overall recovery effort, and I can explain more about that. But that means that I'm going to go and take an opportunity that came to me from Vail Resorts to go and help them for a 7-month contract and be able to drive to work every day. For a little while. So I'm a little excited, and I've been working closely with the town staff, and I've talked to each of the board members, including Ken. I spoke to him today. The next page, the transition action items, is some of the action items that I have that I would like to get through this week, for the coming week, to really let go of some of my day-to-day responsibilities, which is primarily practicing invoices and getting them over to Chris and his team and Christy to cut checks, that kind of stuff. And I'm going to be working with Tessa on that, Tessa and Chris. And, but outside of that, that's where we are. And then the next page, which is just a loose page, has a list of responsibilities of recovery managers that I'll continue to do. Basically, that's oversight of all the recovery efforts. And the big piece there is that this was a plan that I kind of laid out 3 years ago after the flood. And some of it's worked. Some of it hasn't. For example, Gillespie Gulch. And my commitment to the town is that we're not left with debt when this thing is over. And and to say, okay, Chris, this is now your problem to handle, or Erica, or Jen, or anybody, Heather, whomever, that was unfair. Those people either weren't here or weren't involved in creating this plan at that time. And don't have the background or the history or the knowledge of what happened and why it happened, why we made decisions or why we didn't know to make decisions, didn't have conversations with people across the state when these things occurred. And so to say that it's not somebody else's problem to deal with, I think would be unfair. And would also go against my values of finishing what I started and delivering, doing my best to deliver on the commitments that I made to the community. So I'll be working with the board, obviously still, so be mayor until April 2018, and still live here in town. I'm not going to be asked. Everybody here has my cell phone number, and if you don't, it's at the bottom of every email and on the town website. And call me, text me, I'll do my best to get back. Chris and I are working on developing some reports that I'll be able to use sort of from a high-level overview and that we'll be able to share with the board as well. So those that are interested and anybody in the community that might be interested. And I think this is one of those reports that we'll produce on a more regular basis. And still meeting with the town staff, Chris and Jennifer, and Molly from Boulder County Collaborative. Just want to be here every day. So I'm still available for whatever recovery things people need. And I'll also still be managing the GOCO project with the park committee, or with the GOCO grant committee. I'll still be managing the elevation project because I've got some concerns that have raised with the state and FEMA about the guidance that's been added on by the state. And so we'll be working with Jennifer and the state to identify an alternative project for the PW that was originally for the fire station, which we didn't need to use because we had grant and insurance money. And we'll be bringing that when we come up with some eligible ideas. And we'll be bringing that forward to the board. So, anything else? Any questions, concerns?
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Watch your car drive out of town.
I'll need to go yet. I may be a more pleasant person.
Are you allowed to
take the
We didn't do open forum.
Oh, goodness. Anybody here for open forum? Seeing none. Any motion to adjourn?
Wait, come on. Chair does it.
I'll second your motion.
This is totally wrong. We can't just let everything fall to pieces.
It's all going.
It already is. You're supposed to sing the adjournment.
I'm going to debate. I just had to leave my TV on. So
it's a free for all.
Go ahead.
I assume everybody's in favor.
Yes, no, why not? Yeah. Raise your hand there, Carolyn. Yeah,
raise your hand. Hang on. Can we get a first?
I reject that first.
She first.
I seconded.
I seconded.
Carolyn first.
Chuck.
And you named it first.
No, I'm not voting yes on that.
Bye.
That's fine.
Yes, we can go.